Thank you for joining me on the Mitochondrial Summit. My guest is Dr. Joseph Mercola. We're going to be exploring increasing your energy from the mitochondria. But before we do, a little bit about Dr. Mercola. He started one of the original and premier websites in the world on natural health called Mercola.com. That was 1997. So 22 years later, he's still got it rocking and rolling, changing lives. He's wrote at least a dozen books, multiple New York Times bestselling author. He's impacted millions of people, including myself, worldwide, about natural health, and continues to push despite the censorship that he's had against him. Dr. Mercola, welcome to the summit.
Hey, great to be here, Jay.
Well, I am excited to talk about the mitochondria. I know this is an area that you are just super passionate about. From a listener perspective, what do we need to know about the mitochondria so we can kind of wrap our heads about what this is?
Well, the mitochondria are organelles or subcellular structures that have migrated into your cells, actually all cells, not just human cells, but eukaryotic cells. And it really gives us the ability to use oxygen as a fuel source because bacteria really can't do that. And they have to rely on glycolysis or anaerobic fermentation. So that's oxygen is a very powerful way. It's like supercharging your fuel source, and you're able to create 18 times the energy that bacteria do. And as a result of that, we have lots of energy. In fact, the energy density in the human body or in the mitochondria is 10,000 times greater than the sun, the density.
Wow.
I mean, it's just incredible the amount of energy that's created as a result of this phenomenal process of biology, which is the mitochondria. And they do it through something called oxidative phosphorylation, and it's a complex process, but if you understand how it works, you can optimize that production, and we'll talk about some of the ways to do that today.
So how long have you been interested in the mitochondria, studying it, trying to put that into practice?
I learned about mitochondria in biology in high school, so that was in the 70s, but didn't develop a full appreciation of it until I started, was inspired to learn more about metabolic flexibility through Mark Sisson, who was a real leader in the field and understood it long before I did. And, you know, I didn't know what burning fat for fuel was. I just didn't understand it, like maybe people may not now either. So metabolic flexibility is your body has the ability to burn primarily two fuels, fat or carbs. And most people in the country, I would say upwards of 80%, maybe even somewhere between 80 and 90%, have lost their metabolic flexibility, and they just can burn carbs. So the first way that you want to improve your mitochondrial function and secondary energy output is by regaining your metabolic flexibility. And that is to be able to burn fat. Why? Because fat burns far more efficiently, incredibly more efficiently, and it creates less pollution. And pollution is in the form of something we call reactive oxygen species, which can generate free radicals, which can damage your cell membranes, your DNA, your protein, your stem cells, and your mitochondria. So you really want to optimize your fuel source and have the ability to switch back and forth whenever you need to. And it's not that carbs are evil or perniciously a problem. They aren't. You need carbohydrates. I firmly convinced it. And people who are strong advocates of keto and think that, you know, they should never eat carbs or even carnivores, I don't think they've got it wrong. And I think ultimately their health will suffer if they don't integrate the carbs back in. So we basically have two large groups of people. Those who are basically following the standard American diet are absolutely metabolically inflexible. How do you know if you are? Well, you can do an insulin resistance test, or you can just look to see if you have high blood pressure, if you're overweight, like two-thirds or 70% of the country is, if you have diabetes, or cancer. So if you got any of those going on, you probably are metabolically inflexible, unless you knew that and are in the process of having resolved it. So if you're at that point, and especially if you're overweight, then you're clearly going to want to go on a relatively radical program. And interestingly, I found you could do a low carb, but you know what the ultimate low carb diet is?
Keto?
No.
Carnivore?
Carnivore, yes. Carnivore. Or fasting, because it's zero carbs.
Yeah.
So, but I find fasting is a lot harder for people, especially if you're metabolically inflexible. The last thing you want to do is start fasting. That's really dangerous. Do not recommend it. So simple carnivore. Carnivore can be very expensive because ideally your source of meat, meat only, no carbs, no vegetables, just meat. And ideally nose to tail, so you're eating the connective tissue and the organs too. Connective tissue becomes really important because your methionine to glycine ratio will become this year. But anyway, if you eat carnivore, you're not fasting, you're zero carbs, and you will radically it literally within 2 weeks, almost everyone switches to regains their metabolic flexibility. I can't tell you the number of diabetics I put on this that were 100 pounds overweight, and literally 2 weeks their blood sugars are normalized just by doing carnivore. Because low carb is too hard for most people. You know, it's just hard to do. So you do the carnivore if you're a beginner, and you do it until you're feeling better, and then you've got to integrate some carbs. And you don't do continuous carnivore. You got to cycle the carbs back in. Like what I mean by carbs, healthy carbs, things like fruits, low oxalate fruits. I'm a big, really concerned about oxalate nowadays. So you got to be concerned about that, and it's too much for this discussion. But so you get that going. Now, if you are metabolically flexible and, you know, your normal body weight, and you're like many of the people watching this most likely are relatively familiar with a lot of these principles, then you're going to want to integrate the next phase, which is, and you can even do this on the carnivore, is to compress your eating window. You know, the Sachin Panda has done a lot of the basic research. He's out of the Salk Institute in California. He found that 90%, 9 out of 10 people are eating more than 12 hours a day. And probably half are eating 16 hours a day. And the only time they're not eating is when they're sleeping. We were not designed to do that. And if you do that, you are sabotaging yourself and creating massive amounts of chronobiological issues, but also metabolic complications. So compress your eating window. I think it should be down to at least 8 hours. I mean, at least, and, you know, preferably some more 4 to 6 once you get the hang of it. And then once you're doing that for a while, then you want to integrate days of fasting. You know, initially you can do a 2-day fast once or twice a week until your body weight is normal. You never want to fast if you're below your ideal body weight. That's a bad idea. Really bad idea. Or if you have an eating disorder. But assuming you don't have those, then you can start fasting. And I fast I used to fast 2 days twice a week. Then I switched it down to once a week. And now I'm doing the 3-day fast once a month. Because it's just, you know, it's a journey for everyone. And that's what works out for me. So you have to figure it out. But it's a powerful intervention. It will reduce things called senescent cells, which are senile cells that are damaged and degraded. They stop reproducing, except they create a lot of inflammatory cytokines or these protein messengers, which cause inflammation and really mess up your body and your mitochondrial function. So fasting will help get rid of that. And it also activates autophagy. Autophagy is a process that is from two Greek words, which means self-eating, and essentially gets rid of the damaged cellular parts inside the cell that are damaged, like proteins and such, that are really clogging up the system and needs to be removed. And, you know, if you're overweight, you probably haven't been activating autophagy for decades, good chance, as many people in the country have. So that's a, you know, just a general health thing, but it'll also improve your mitochondrial function, because anything that improves your mitochondrial function is going to improve your energy and decrease your risk for just about virtually every chronic disease. You know, I'm fond of the chiropractic profession because they have embraced the concept of the innate, at least the leaders initially. Now, there's some chiropractors who are practicing basically MDs with a DC license that don't get that. But the truth is that your body has this innate wisdom to essentially reverse just about any disease that comes across. Just about every disease can be reversed unless you're, you know, beyond the tipping point, which certainly happens. But that's uncommon. I mean, a person's a week or two before death, it's going to be really tough, if not impossible, to reverse. But for most diseases, your body can reverse. And a lot of the strategies to do it is to improve the function of the mitochondria. So
what's your thoughts on time frame then? You said not to get caught in carnivore or keto forever. So if we enter into this for a therapeutic effect, is this a week? Yeah. Is this a month? Is this just, it depends on your body?
Depends on the person. For some people, it can be a significant portion of a year or longer. For someone who's 400, 500 pounds, it's going to take a while for that to resolve. But for most people, it's probably a few months. Or you could do strict keto, low carb. That's hard to do. You got to really be diligent and count your macros. And there's free web tools like Chronometer, Chronometer.com that allow you to do that and track it real accurately. But normally it's not, I would say for most people who are relatively healthy and normal weight being the real key, probably just a few weeks. And then you want to cycle back into carbs. But again, it's all about cycling, going in and out. So you have days where you're not eating at all. You have that restricted eating window, which I think everyone should do like the rest of their life. Not to be written in stone. I mean, there's going to be days where you're going to violate that. But for the most part, you know, that's your goal. Get it down to 4 to 6 hours. And you'll radically improve your health. And the other component with that is that the side of it is that some people make the mistake of eating real late. Like they may not have their first meal till 3 p.m. and have their last meal at 8 and then go to bed at 9. That is a really, really bad idea. And I'll tell you why. I mean, most everyone would acknowledge that that's a bad idea. You want at least 3 hours and maybe 4 hours, or I do 6 hours. Like I just finished my last meal at 2:30 and I'll be probably asleep by 9. So 5, 6, that's over 6.5 hours that I will have not eaten the food. And because it takes that long for your body to digest the food, and you want to be in a fasting mode. And if you're not, if you've eaten calories right before, like most people do, then what happens is your body can't use those. And it backs up in the electron transport chain in the mitochondria. It generates excessive free radicals, which causes damage. But in addition to that, it has to store those calories that you're not burning as fat. And your body's ability to do that and the rate limiting really important biomolecule that gets used up is a derivative of NAD. It's called NADPH. Have you heard of that molecule before?
Yep.
Yeah. So NADPH is the electron the donator. It's a reservoir of reductive potential, and it recharges your antioxidants like glutathione, vitamin E, vitamin C. And if you're using it up to make fats, that's a really, really bad idea. And that's exactly what you do if you eat calories close to bedtime. So that's a simple, simple strategy. Very powerful. Doesn't cost you anything. No supplements that you have to buy or anything. It's going to save you money, actually. So simple things like that.
So what's your current eating time window for you right now?
Well, I'm doing another interesting biohack for my mitochondria, which is hyperbaric oxygen. And I get up, I do my exercise routine, and I do it, follow with a near infrared sauna, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And then I finish with hyperbaric oxygen for about an hour and a half. So I'm out of the chamber, typically not every day, but most 5 days a week, I'm out of the chamber about 10 to 11. And that's when my first meal is. And I'll go for a walk on the beach. And then it's very uncommon for me to be eating after 3.
Okay. So you have a pretty compressed window then, about 4 hours roughly?
Yeah. Probably somewhere between 4 and 5.
Okay.
Even if it's 8, believe me, you're so far ahead of the curve. I mean, you're literally better than 98% of the people in the country if you're eating less than 8 hours, because 90% are eating more than 12 hours. Go do the math.
Yeah.
So, you know, people less than 4 hours is probably 1/10 of 1/10 of 1%.
So is the goal then to vary it up, to force your body to be able to adapt to basically trigger autophagy in the fasting side, and then when you're eating, trigger mTOR and be able to bounce back and forth?
Very good point, because I made a big mistake, and I hope I can help other people avoid the mistake I made, which is being afraid of mTOR. mTOR, you know, when I first learned about it from Ron Rosedale, it was like the devil. And, you know, it can cause cancer, and it stimulates something called a process called anabolism, or building muscle tissue. And that's exactly what, not muscle tissue, but building tissues. And that's one of the pathways that the cancer uses. But it's like everything. It's only bad when it's abused. So you need mTOR. In fact, I radically activate mTOR nearly every day, you know, by intent, by high proteins, high carbs. And it's just for a short window, 4 to 5 hours. And the other times I'm not giving my body any food, so it's down regulating it. And I was fasting more regularly, obviously, when you're really suppressing mTOR. So you need this balance to cycle back and forth. But if you're compressing your eating window, you're getting that balance back in there, and you don't have to worry about continuous activation of mTOR, because that is problematic. And, you know, it is definitely counterproductive if one of your goals is to live a long life.
Yeah, that's one of the things, especially like in the chronic illness side, like Lyme disease, it's so common to see like these skinny fat people that they're little, but they don't have any muscle. And the muscle, you know, the body breaks the muscle down to get amino acids to activate the immune system. So I'm like, to some degree, it's like you want to trigger mTOR to build some actual muscle mass.
Yes.
To, you know, strengthen the immune system.
Well, it's interesting.
Or to have as a reservoir.
I'm in the process right now of writing a paper. I'm going to start writing papers again. I've been writing books, but I'm going to actually write scientific papers. The current one I have is like about 200 references, and it's like 25 pages. And it's, the title is Sarcopenia. The natural way to resolve sarcopenia was something with a process called blood flow restriction training, which is a specific type of exercise, which is the most amazing biohack I ever encountered. And you are absolutely correct. The sarcopenia is a major problem. Many people who are interested in longevity don't understand that you have to have muscle mass. It is really crucial for so many things. And if you don't have it, I mean, it's 40% of your body tissue is muscles. And it requires protein, but it's not just throwing protein at it. You need to give it a signal to actually activate mTOR and many of the metabolic pathways. Specifically, so you've got two type of muscle fibers, type 1s, which is slow twitch, and type 2, which is the fast twitch. And most people, like walking or running, it's just the slow twitch. And that's not going to build muscle. You've got to activate the fast twitch. And the traditional way is this heavy resistance training. And typically, there's this concept of one maximum one rep, the most weight you can lift with one rep. And you figure out what that is, and you're doing like 70, 80% of that is your exercise training. And when you get stronger, that's a pretty heavy weight, and it can easily, and in most people, leads to injuries. But this blood flow restriction is just the most amazing hack I've ever seen, because essentially you put these bands on your arms and your legs, not at the same time. You leave it on for 15 to 20 minutes, and you do these very low weights. So like if, say, you could lift 50 pounds with bicep curl, you would do 15, maybe 20 pounds, 15, you know, somewhere around that. But you do a lot of reps. You do like 30 reps, then you wait like 15 seconds, you do another 30, and you wait and you do another 30. And this restriction builds up lactic acid in the muscle, because it's relatively hypoxic, and because of the lack of oxygen, you have to use an alternative pathway and basically metabolizes pyruvate down to the lactic acid. And this lactate is unbelievable messenger. Normally, you don't get high levels of lactate in your blood unless you're lifting really, really heavy stuff, like lifting cars and stuff, you know? So you fool your body into think it's doing that, and it responds enormously. And lactate is a really important fuel. In fact, your brain, and if you have high lactate levels, you know, we know your brain can work on ketones, right? Basically, Cahill out of Harvard, who's passed away now, did not the primary research in that. But you could also, it can 60% of its fuel can be derived from lactate. And it actually serves as a fuel, a fertilizer in your brain. It makes brain-derived neurotrophic factor. But it also stimulates other things like vascular endothelial growth factor, which basically is fertilizer for your blood vessels. So you get increased vascularity in your heart and your brain and your muscles all over the place. It's just crazy good. You increase nitric oxide. And it also, that's a really cool hack. Have you heard of myostatin, which is a protein inhibitor?
Yes.
Okay, so myo just means muscle, and statin means it slows it down. So if you have high levels of myostatin, then you can't build muscle. So what lactate does is it actually inhibits myostatin. The levels go down by 50%, and you increase growth hormone and IGF-1. And you stimulate all these incredible pathways, you know, like mTOR. So it's such a great hack. And the beautiful thing is you're working with a weight that is almost impossible to cause an injury because it's so low. And because it's so low and you're not causing muscle trauma, you don't get this massive need for recovery. So you could almost do it every day if the weight is low enough, which is just great. And then you build up your muscle, and especially if you're doing it in the fasted state, which is the best time to do exercise, because you really can get most of the benefits. And then right afterwards, actually, I like to do the sauna first with a near-infrared sauna and then hyperbaric oxygen to feed it. But then it feeds within an hour or two. And it's just like you're giving the body exactly what it needs, and it just responds, and it's just crazy what the results that you can achieve by doing these simple hacks.
Yeah, the blood flow restriction, I'm a big fan, been doing it about a year and a half. Actually did intense workout yesterday. It's so awesome because you don't have to lift heavy weight, but really put some, you can put some muscle mass on with it.
Yeah, it was developed by a Japanese professor, Sato, S-A-T-O, about over 50 years ago. The guy is 73 years old. His biceps are bigger than most people's legs. And the guy is incredible. But his machine costs like